Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Science Chat, the science communication podcast. My name is Sean Murph. Though it took place over a month ago on January 30th and only happened in the UK, 1023 still finds its way onto blogs and in the UK press. Well, Science Chat has eventually managed to get an episode devoted to 1023 and homeopathy. I spoke first to Martin Robbins of layscience.net, who was one of the organisers of 1023. Martin, tell me about 1023 and who was behind it.
Well, it was started off by the Mersey Science Skeptics Society, and we had support right from the beginning from people like Edzard Burns and David Goldin and Simon Singh, basically from when everyone was watching the parliamentary hearings of the Select Committee, and it was just so ridiculous what people were seeing that they kind of felt the need to organise something to protest against it.
And what did you hope to achieve with 1023?
We wanted to sort of try and strike in a few directions. We wanted to sort of educate the public to some extent. If we can get it into enough newspapers that homeopathy is ridiculous and there's nothing in it, then that's obviously going to help the public to learn a bit more about it. And it was surprising, really, before we started and as this kind of publicity started going out, little people actually know that a lot of people who even use homeopathy don't have a clue what it is. So we were hoping to sort of get to the public, but we're also kind of trying to put some pressure on groups and on the NHS and the MHRA to sort of show that actually there are kind of, people who are pissed off at the current situation, that there are votes in it and there is public support in getting rid of it.
And was there a specific reason the vote was selected?
Well, I think if you're going to start a campaign and you want to get press attention, you kind of have to have a villain of the piece, as it were. I don't think it mattered too much whether we'd gone after Boots or whether we'd gone after the NHS directly or whatever. I think with Boots, though, what we were kind of trying to tap into was some consumer kind of feeling as well. We wanted to sort of get across the fact that it's not just a question of wasting taxpayers' money, it's not just a question of kind of harmless cracks. These people are also kind of fleecing people of lots of money for their treatments, which don't work. And Boots, are doing it very blatantly. They're saying, oh, we've got no reason to believe it works, but we're going to take your money anyway. And as, leading pharmacists, that's pretty, nasty behaviour. And it actually still shocks me that they're still openly kind of pursuing this policy, even though the kind of Royal Pharmaceutical Society's come out against it now.
And the homeopathic medicines that Boots are selling, do they tend to be Boots' own brand? Is that the way it's marketed in the UK?
Yeah, they're manufactured, I believe they're manufactured by Nelson's, but they're packaged in Boots labelling and they're sold as kind of Boots' own brand products. They're actually currently having these products made and selling them, which just kind of makes the whole thing even worse, really.
So Boots would obviously, they're not going to have any problem with continuing to sell them, as you say.
No, and we made complaints on that with the MHRA as well, in terms of some of the things that Boots were doing, and in almost every aspect of the way that Boots have approached this, they're operating to kind of just within the letter of the law, rather than maybe within the kind of spirit of the law. So they've got a whole website that they have which tells customers about homeopathy and how brilliantly it works, but because it's not advertising any particular specific products, they're allowed to just get away with that. And they're selling products, several products which are homeopathic products which you're generally not allowed to give indications for or make health claims for. But they're making health claims for these products under the original 1968 Medicines Act, and they're getting away with it because under the more recent acts, products that were already licensed under previous acts, it's a kind of voluntary agreement. If you want to have it registered under the new acts, you're allowed to, but if you don't want to, then you can kind of get away with selling your products. And so they're really, operating just within the letter of the law and getting away with as much as they possibly can.
So because of the way homeopathic medicines work and because they don't have as such an active ingredient in it, they fall outside of the regulations for regulating medicines then?
Well, the MHRA, their evidence on this has been very confused, and I mean, one of the things that's come up from the Select Committee report is that we still don't really have a good explanation for why they allowed acrylic acid arnica, for example, to be licensed under MHRA regulations, because there's just no, there's no logic to it. Essentially, the normal requirements for medicines that they have to prove their efficacy and so on were just waived in the case of arnica. Things like, for example, the label testing was conducted with test questions that assumed that misled people taking the test into believing that there was an active ingredient inside. And so quite why the MHRA decided to go down this route is inexplicable, really. I think Kent Woods has probably got quite a few questions that he should be answering and thinking about.
With the smaller shops that sell homeopathic medicines and with the homeopathic practitioners, you know, who deal with people who come to them, do you think that they are actually doing it from a financial point of view as well, or are they operating under some kind of misguided belief?
It's very difficult to say without doing a sort of an extensive survey. Certainly, there is a major problem in those smaller shops. I mean, you can still go to these shops in around London and you can quite easily find things like malaria prophylactics still, and all sorts of, you know, health claims being made. It's very hard to believe. I mean, it's kind of like the Simon Sinek again. You know, it's hard sometimes to look at these people and not think that they're being in some way dishonest, but many of them do genuinely believe in the treatments that they're selling, I think. I suspect to some extent you'd have to, if you're going to go into that as a profession and take qualifications and something.
Do you think that 1023 was successful?
I think it depends how you define your success, obviously, always, but I think in terms of the public awareness side of things, I think we've got lots of media coverage, which lots of people heard about homeopathy, I think, for the first time in terms of serious scrutiny of it in the papers. On the Boots side, less successful, really, mainly because, as I said before, there's nothing really that you can directly touch them on under the current regulations as they stand. Hopefully, if those become tightened up as a result of the Select Committee report, with any luck, that will force Boots to kind of reappraise their position.
It was that Select Committee report that came out this week, was it, that actually said that there was no scientific basis behind homeopathy?
Yeah, they said a few interesting things. They said that there was no reason to believe that homeopathy works beyond placebo effects. They also criticised the standard of the evidence that was put forward by homeopaths, and they followed on from the piece that I wrote for the Guardian that I was actually feeding stuff to Ed Harris to when I was writing it and talking to him, and he's criticised the homeopaths for misrepresenting evidence effectively in the report itself. So the verdict has been very, very damning, not just for the evidence to the book, but for the way that they've actually conducted themselves during the hearings. And they've also gone further. They've not just said that there's no evidence. In fact, they haven't said that there's no evidence. They've said there's plenty of evidence and that it comes against homeopathy. So not only are they saying that homeopathy can't be shown to work beyond placebo, the report's also saying that there shouldn't be any further research conducted into it. And in fact, that it would be unethical to do that because you would be testing products on people that have already been shown to be ineffective. So it's a very, very damning report for homeopathy.
I see. And are there any more activities like 1023 planned to raise awareness about homeopathy?
At the moment, no. I think we're in sort of a period now where we're coming up to an election, and I think that in this parliament we've kind of done all that we can to raise the issue and get it heard and get it into the media. I think the issue now is going to be when the next government comes in here, which is we're literally only a few weeks away from a general election now here. I think when the new government comes in, then it's time to try and sort of put some pressure on whoever comes into office. How exactly we're going to do that, not decided yet, but we'll obviously be talking more about that when the time comes.
Finally, Martin, tell us something about your blog, layscience.net.
It's just turned 2 years old, and it kind of started just with me being, I've sort of done a PhD, and the PhD that I was doing was on the immune system modeling, and so I know quite a bit about the immune system and how it works. And what I found was I kept coming across some claims for, adverts for products that claim to boost your immune system, and I knew that this was kind of nonsense, and I'm a pretty opinionated person generally. about guest blogging there and putting their own pieces up. So it's really growing into quite a nice little community. I've got quite big plans for it as well this year that I'm hoping to grow it further and go into video blogging as well and so on. And it's given me a writing career now as well, which is fantastic.
Do you think science blogs like that are a very important part of science communication in the 21st century?
I think we need to see more of the 21st century to be able to answer that question. I think the problem at the moment with the science blogosphere is that largely it's written by people who are interested in science and skepticism for people that are interested in science and skepticism. And I think there's a bit of a barrier that we need to kind of break. But we're starting to do it. I mean, I was very pleased the other day to find that Ben Goldacre's book about science is one of the top recommended books on mums. And those are the kinds of communities I think we need to kind of break into, because when you're talking about something like anti-vaccine or the MMR scare, the people that are being affected by it, the people that are no longer vaccinating their children, are generally middle-class, middle-aged, well-educated mothers and parents, and they don't necessarily read science blogs. So I think the question is, we've got this great base, we've got lots of good writers, lots of talent, how do we take what we're saying and get it into a new kind of venue? And that's the real challenge, I think, for the next few years.
And on that note, so I say thank you very much, Martin, for talking to me today. Putting forward the homeopathy case was Sheila Behan of the Irish Society of Homeopaths, who you can find on irishhomeopathy.ie. Sheila, what are the aims of the Irish Society of Homeopaths?
Okay, Sean, the Irish Society of Homeopaths represents professional homeopaths in Ireland and is committed to promoting homeopathy as a health treatment choice for everyone. We set and maintain standards for homeopaths by keeping a professional register, and we have in excess of 400 members throughout Ireland, and that includes students, graduates and registered members. And the main aims of the society are to increase awareness of homeopathy, to regulate standards and ethics in practice, and to provide continuing professional development for members and work towards the integration of homeopathy within the Irish healthcare system, and also to make homeopathy accessible to everyone, essentially.
And how does the Irish Society of Homeopaths regulate their members?
The Irish Society of Homeopaths is the registering body for homeopaths in Ireland. It has two roles mainly, okay? The first as the regulator of the profession, and the second representing members. In both roles, however, it is concerned mostly with safeguarding the interests of our patients. As a regulator, it monitors and assesses the educational standards of course providers, and it makes sure these are up to scratch, okay? And for its members, as I said before, it offers continuing professional development and workshops and seminars and all that kind of thing. It also requires all members to abide by a very strict code of ethics and practice, and what we call the core criteria for homeopathic practice. The members who decide to take up registration with the society have to undergo a 2-year registration process, which is a quite complicated process, but they have to do that for 2 years.
On your website, you state that you consider 1023 to have been highly irresponsible. What does the Irish Society of Homeopaths believe that the aims of 1023 were?
Well, on a programme just recently on DCU-FM, I don't know if you heard it, it was just a couple of weeks ago, Ben Goldacre actually stated that it was all a bit of a joke, really. So I don't know what you take from that. But anyway, the reality is that by attempting to ridicule homeopathy, they have really only shown their complete ignorance. They have also demonstrated, in our opinion, a completely irresponsible attitude in that advertising that they are taking an overdose of anything, and people don't always understand, you know, the difference between the different things in a pharmacy. But taking an overdose of anything you might buy in a pharmacy is certainly, in our opinion, not giving a responsible message to young people in particular, in general, okay? This group is also part of a lobby headed by Sense About Science, who are a UK group funded by the pharmaceutical industry and backed by a small group of UK MPs. And all of this is documented on the web and is taken from their own websites. In our opinion, they appear to be targeting homeopathy as part of a campaign to try to convince the public that conventional medicine is the only option open to them. And this is clearly not the case, as 65% of Europeans already use complementary and alternative therapies, and this is according to the World Health Organization. It's a statistic that was recently published.
You also state on your website that the participants of 1023 failed to consider the number of people worldwide who use homeopathy or the success of the patient outcomes. How would you respond to the assertion that proof of medical efficacy is not measured in terms of the number of people using the treatment or indeed the patient outcomes?
Well, the real issue here is, do people get better with homeopathy? It has been shown that 70% of 23,000 patients, for example, in a six-year study from a major homeopathic hospital outpatient centre in the UK, reported clinical improvement in their symptoms. And this statistic of 70% to even 80% in some studies reporting improvement would be reflected in most homeopathic practices as well on the ground. And really and truly, are they seriously suggesting that there are well over 70,000 doctors worldwide practicing homeopathy, 500 million people and 30 million people? And are they suggesting that all of these people who use homeopathy and practice homeopathy are all wrong? And what I would also say is that despite all of this naysaying and whatnot, homeopathy continues to grow and grow. So you might ask yourself, why? And the reason is that people who get better tell their family and friends. And on the ground, word of mouth is a lot more powerful than people imagine. Most of our referrals come through word of mouth. People are not fools. They actually do know when they're better. And let's not forget that there were, up to the end of 2009, 74 randomized controlled trials of homeopathy published in peer-reviewed journals, of which 63 were positive for homeopathy. Recent trials also carried out in the Netherlands with placebo controls on a thing called E. coli diarrhea in newborn piglets have also confirmed homeopathy's effectiveness. Six times more in effect than placebo. Other laboratory research which proves that ultra-high dilutions have clearly discernible effects include, and these are some of the recent studies that I'm quoting here, cytotoxic effects of ultra-diluted remedies on breast cancer cells. This was a study done in the University of Texas recently. Then there's other studies being done in France on the electromagnetic properties of ultra-high dilutions, and these are done by a team headed by Luc Montagnier, who was co-winner of the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine in 2008 for his discovery along with his colleagues of the HIV virus. Another one again is done on the thermoluminescence of ultra-high dilutions, research done by Ray et al. I think that was in Switzerland. Other studies have been done in the past few years of the effects of histamine on basophils, of ultra-high dilutions of histamine on basophils. And these studies have shown that the effects of the histamine in ultra-high dilutions has a discernible effect on the basophils. And these studies were replicated in over four university centres. So what I would also like to point out too is that homeopaths do not only use ultra-high dilutions. We use our remedies from mother tinctures upwards. The main principle governing homeopathy is the law of similars, which means that a substance that can cause a certain group of symptoms, that same substance can stimulate a healing response when taken in much smaller doses. And this is also recognized in toxicology as a process called hormesis. The second guiding principle of homeopathy is the minimum dose, and is in fact validated, if you like, by this hormesis principle about the contrary effects of a smaller dose. And all of these studies can be found, and a lot more besides, can be found on the British Homeopathic Association website, britishhomeopathic.org, okay? And some of them can also be found on our own website, irishhomeopathy.ie, okay? And, you know, if anybody wants to research, there are a lot of other sites as well with a lot of very, very interesting research.
So, in the face of that type of research and those results, what was your opinion then of the recent findings of the UK Science and Technology Select Committee when they found that the systematic reviews and meta-analysis of the evidence that was presented to them by the homeopaths themselves, they found that that evidence conclusively demonstrated that homeopathic products perform no better than placebos? Would you say then that they were wrong in that assertion?
I would say it was completely untrue. The evidence from systematic reviews and the meta-analysis and original clinical trials that were presented in specific conditions and from research in biological models that I have quoted above as well was absolutely valid. The evidence, which was entirely ignored in the report, contains findings that do not support the view that homeopathy is a placebo. What I would like to have a look at too is how this Science and Technology Committee works. Okay? The Science and Technology Committee is a UK parliamentary select committee charged with looking into what informs government policy in a number of areas. And by the way, you know, you might ask why it chose homeopathy, which is just 0.004% of the NHS budget and has been part of the NHS since 1948. Now, this committee was made up of a number of people, okay? Phil Willis, who was the chair of the committee, was at pains at the beginning to put on record that it was not to be an investigation into whether homeopathy worked or not. And then he chaired a committee which did exactly that, but restricted the investigation to the narrow remit of randomized controlled trials and not all the other types of research and trials that I have quoted. So on this committee, of the original people that were on it, two were associates of the pharmaceutical industry lobby group Sense About Science. One was a farmer, another was a professor of chemistry, then there was an analytical chemist, and then there was a chemical plant operator. And the most important thing to remember about all of this is that none of these MPs present at any of the hearings had any expertise or even understanding of homeopathy or the homeopathic method. The committee spent a total of 4.5 hours questioning 12 witnesses, 7 of whom also had no expertise or understanding of the homeopathic method. 5 of the 9 non-governmental witnesses had previously publicly declared they were vehemently opposed to homeopathy. Only one witness is in clinical practice. The procedure called for written submissions. Closing date was the 6th of November 2009. Based on these submissions, witnesses would be selected to give oral submissions at the committee meetings. Almost 50 written submissions were received by the closing date, and invitations for witnesses were apparently sent out only 48 hours later. And it's quite obvious from that time that they had been pre-selected and that the submissions were not properly read. All claims of bias were ignored by the committee, and the draft report was subsequently written. Ian Stewart, one of the people on the committee, put forward an amendment not to ratify the report as it stood, but to call upon government to fund a rigorous research program into homeopathy. This was not passed. The vote to accept the report and its recommendations to stop funding the NHS, homeopathy on the NHS, on the basis that the evidence did not support government policy, was 3-4-1 against. So this report was ratified by just 3 MPs, okay, of whom Evan Harris was the associate of Sense About Science and is a rabid anti-homeopathy campaigner for God knows what reason, a 1023 participant and senior counsel for the prosecution. Ian Causey was an IT expert who joined the Science and Technology Committee in October 2009, just a month before the meetings, and chose not to attend the investigation, and in fact was nowhere to be seen until the ratification meeting. And then there was another guy, an immunologist, again didn't join the committee until January 2010, and was not on the committee until after all the hearings, but was present for the ratification of the report. And this MP is also standing down at the next election. So, to summarise, the report and its recommendations were ratified by 3 MPs, 2 of whom were not even present at the committee meetings, and 1 of the 2 was not even a member of the committee when the hearings were held, and is due to stand down at the election in May this year. The Science and Technology Committee investigation into homeopathy was a set-up and a sham from its inception to the final meeting and delivery of the report to the UK press.
I had intended to ask you about the licensing of the medical trials for homeopathic medicines, but from what you've already said, the trials that are actually put forward as evidence are properly licensed and are properly managed. So what I would like to ask you instead is, if the committee review and the committee report was such a setup, why is it that the British Homeopathic Association haven't fought back? Because I certainly haven't seen it in the press.
Well, if you go on to the British Homeopathic Association, they actually take apart the whole report piece by piece, okay?
Yeah.
And they refute each assertion bit by bit, and they have an extremely detailed an extremely detailed piece on it. It's on their website.
But
you don't always get access, unfortunately. When you're trying to refute something, you do not always get the access to the press and to the channels of communication, if you like, that one would like. So that doesn't make news.
Yeah, from what you said, I mean, certainly it seems to me the newspapers and blogs and websites that I'm reading online about it, it's very much just putting forward the one point of view. You know, 1023 was a success. The UK Science and Technology Select Committee have come out and they've said that homeopathy provides no better than the placebo effect, and there doesn't seem to be anything there to say, well, you know, to actually take the report part in the way that you have here, which I think it's a major failing on their part, because all of this is putting forward just one side of the argument.
Can I just make a point there that I just got news today, for example, that on an EU level, okay, there has been a report to the President on economic and scientific policy, from which I would like to quote, okay, because this does, it does actually mention homeopathy in a very positive way.
Okay.
And I quote from the report, okay, it says, the EU could lead in using public money to assess homeopathy and other alternative therapies. Moreover, as the scientific research agenda is strongly conditioned by the interests of industry, the EU could play a leading role in financing with public monies trials to assess alternative therapies, unquote. Okay, now for us, this is obviously very heartening news indeed that the EU wants to look at things in a little bit more of a serious light, and we look forward definitely to a brighter future where homeopathy will be fully acknowledged by all as playing a major role in healthcare, both in Europe and the world. Most people would agree that we would all like to have better for healthcare, and we would certainly like to see an integrated, patient-centred approach where the best of conventional and complementary treatments are available to all patients under expert guidance. This is what the ISSH, the Irish Society of Homeopaths, and our colleagues in other countries all continue to work towards.
Finally then, Sheila, do you think that the 1023 campaign damaged homeopathy in the UK? I certainly wouldn't think that it damaged it in Ireland, but do you think that it did any damage in the UK?
Not at all. Quite the contrary, in fact. Homeopathy has had wide, positive media coverage, and homeopaths are busy, if not busier than before. In fact, in Ireland, as you know, it never happened anyway. The lone protester withdrew, and nobody else seemed very interested. And may I make the point also, Sean, that some of our greatest homeopaths, in historical terms, were initially sceptics, who, however, went and studied the subject in depth, And after seeing it practiced and practicing it themselves and seeing other homeopaths practice it, were completely convinced of its effectiveness in healing and became its greatest practitioners and advocates. I would suggest that the 1023 group, if they wish to criticize homeopathy, then they should do it from an educated viewpoint. That means that they should study it themselves for at least 4 years, perhaps practice it for another 4 years with another homeopath, and then come and tell us what they think. Maybe instead of opening their mouths to swallow a pile of homeopathic pills, these protesters could open their minds to possibilities.
And on that note, I'd like to say thanks very much, Sheila.
You're very welcome, Sean.
Well, that's all for this episode. As usual, you can find me on sciencechat.net/WordPress, where you're free to comment on this and other episodes.